Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 10, chapter 87, text number 40. Tvad avagami naveti bhavad utta subha subhayor.
Tvad avagami naveti bhavad utta subha subhayor.
Guna vigunan vayam starhi teha britam chakri giraha. Anu yugam anvaham saguna gita paramparaya.
Anu yugam anvaham saguna gita paramparaya.
Shravana brito yatastvam apavarga gatir manujai.
Shravana brito yatastvam apavarga gatir manujai.
Twat.
You.
Avagami, one who understands,
Naveti,
does not pay regard, Bhavat, from you, Utha, rising, Shubha Asubhayo, of the auspiciousness and inauspiciousness. Guna viguna, of good and bad, anvayang, to the attributions, tarhi, consequently, deha britam, of embodied living beings, cha, also, giraha, of the words, Anuyugam, in every age, Anuaham, every day, Saguna, O you who are endowed with qualities, Gita, of recitation, Paramparaya, by the chain of succession, Shravana, through hearing, Vrittaha, carried, Yataha, because of this, Tvam, you, Apavarga, of liberation, Gatihi, the ultimate goal, Manujai, by human beings, descendants of Manu. Translation, when a person realizes you, he no longer cares about his good and bad fortune arising from past pious and sinful acts, since it is you alone who control this good and bad fortune. Such a realized devotee also disregards what ordinary living beings say about him. Every day he fills his ears with your glories, which are recited in each age by the unbroken succession of Manu's descendants, and thus you become his ultimate salvation. Translation responsibly. When a person realizes you, he no longer cares about his good and bad fortune arising from past pious and sinful acts, since it is you alone who control this good and bad fortune. Such a realized devotee also disregards what ordinary living beings say about him. Every day, he fills his ears with your glories, which are recited in each age by the unbroken succession of Manu's descendants. And thus, you become his ultimate salvation.
Purport.
Text 39 clearly states that impersonalistic renunciants will continue to suffer birth after birth. One may ask if this suffering is justified. Since a renunciant's status should exempt him from suffering, whether or not he has a devotional attitude. As the Shruti mantra states, Esha Nityo Mahima Brahmanasya Na Karmana Vardate No Kaniyan. The perpetual glory of a Brahmana is never increased or diminished as a result of any of his activities. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 4.4.28. To counter the objection thus raised, the personified Vedas offer this prayer. What's the objection raised here?
What's the objection?
Previous verse says, if a person maintains material attachments, then they remain in the material world and have to take birth again, right, and die, basically. And they don't get to go back home, back to Godhead either. So no release, even though they perform great austerities. So there's an objection to this. Why is that? What is the objection?
The Brahmins, they shouldn't have to take birth again. Because they're renunciates.
They're renunciates. Yeah, it doesn't say they're Brahmanas necessarily. Yeah. One may ask, if this suffering is justified, since a renunciant's status should exempt him from suffering, whether or not he has a devotional attitude. Impersonalistic jnanis and yogis do not qualify for full relief from the reactions of karma, a privilege reserved only for those who are tvad avagami. Pure devotees constantly engaged in hearing and chanting topics concerning the personality of Godhead. So just performing acts of renunciation is not sufficient to ultimately to please Krishna and to satisfy oneself. And also is not, as it is mentioned here, not necessarily guaranteed to free us from reactions of past good and bad deeds. Huh? Impersonalistic jnanis and yogis do not qualify for full relief from the reactions of karma, a privilege reserved only for those who are tvad avagami, pure devotees constantly engaged in hearing and chanting topics concerning the personality of Godhead. The devotees hold firm to the Supreme Lord's lotus feet by their unrelenting Krishna consciousness. And so they need not strictly adhere to the ritual commands and prohibitions of the Vedas. They can fearlessly ignore the apparent good and bad reactions of the work they do only for the Supreme Lord's pleasure. And they can equally ignore whatever others may say about them, whether praise or condemnation. A humble Vaishnava absorbed in the pleasure of Sankirtan, glorification of the Lord, pays little heed to praise of himself, which he assumes mistaken, and happily accepts all criticism which he deems appropriate. Who happily accepts criticism here? Happily accepts all criticism which he deems appropriate. One receives the authorized chanting of the Supreme Lord's glories by faithfully hearing from the sons of Manu, the disciplic succession of saintly Vaishnavas coming down through the ages. So that's this word here. paramparaya, Gita paramparaya. These sages emulate well the example of Svayambhuva Manu, the forefather of mankind. Ayata yamas tasyasam yamaha svantara yapanaha shrinvato jhayato vishnu guruvato bruvata kata. Although Svayambhuva's life gradually came to an end, his long life, consisting of a manvantara era, was not spent in vain, since he always engaged in hearing, contemplating, writing down and chanting the pastimes of the Lord. Bhagavatam 3:22-35. Even if a neophyte devotee falls from the standards of proper behaviour by the force of his past bad habits, the all-merciful Lord will not reject him. As Lord Sri Krishna states, Tairaham pujaniyo vai badra krishna nivashibhi tadharma gatihina ye tasyam mayi parayana kalina grasita ye vai desham tasyam avastiti yatatvam saha putraischa yata rudro ganai saha yata sriya biyukto ham tata bhakto mama priyaha. For those who live in Bhadra Krishna, the district of Mathura, I am the object of all worship. Even if the residents of that place fail to properly cultivate the religious principles that one should observe in the holy land, they still become devoted to me just by virtue of living there. Even if Kali, the present age of quarrel, has them in his grip, they still get credit for living in this place. My devotee who lives in Mathura is just as dear to me as you, Brahma, and your sons, Rudra, and his followers, and Goddess Sri, and my own self. Srila Sridhar Swami prays, Avagamam tava me disha madhava spuratiyan no sukha 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 sangamaha shavana varnana bhavam atapi va nahi bhavami yata vidi kinkaraha. O Madhava, please let me understand you so that I will no longer experience the entanglement of material pleasure and pain. Or else, just as good, please give me a taste for hearing and chanting about you. In that way, I will no longer be a slave to ritual injunctions. Okay. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Tena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Tena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Tena Tarinam. So Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that one who follows the process of bhakti, follows the process of devotional service, and who surrenders everything to him, will be protected from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Masuchaha Savadharman Parityadya Mamekam Sharanam Braja Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Moksha Yeshyami Masuchaha. Yet a devotee is not looking for liberation. In the previous verse, it's mentioned that persons who maintain a selfish attitude or a selfish mood, have you know, they have motivations, selfish motivations. And those who are looking for liberation are considered to be still caught in the grip of material motivations or selfish motivations. The desire to be liberated is still selfish. You know, to be free from the trouble and strife of material existence is a selfish motivation. Although the desire for liberation might ordinarily be respected and seen as more elevated than, say, accumulating material possessions, because, you know, the accumulation of material possessions certainly brings about misery, right? And that's a gross materialistic motivation, that I be wealthy, that I be learned, that I be influential, that I be powerful, that I be famous, that I have lots of followers, that I have a beautiful spouse. You know, this is material motivation. And of course Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that these things are limited and temporary, and so happiness derived from those things is really only going to bring about misery. So then, more elevated that is the desire to be free from the entanglement of material existence. But even that is motivated, or if motivated, by simply the desire to alleviate suffering. Still there's some personal consideration. Whereas we see in the mood of the acharyas, or we see in the mood of the great, we see in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's in the Sikshastika, Nadanam Najanam Nasundarim Kavitam Vajagadisha Kamaye Mama Jamani Jamanishwari Bhavatad Bhakti Ahoitiki Twai. He says, you know, I don't mind if I don't have any wealth, followers, beautiful women, I'm not looking for any of those things. I'm only interested in rendering service to you. This is the mood of the transcendentalist, the devotee. So therefore, and it's mentioned here in this verse, a devotee who has become attached to Krishna and Krishna's service as a result, then they don't mind shubha, ashubha, good or bad, guna, viguna, good or bad, auspicious or inauspicious. Shubha and ashubha means auspicious or inauspicious, or guna, viguna, good or bad. I don't mind what I get. Why? Because I know that the good and bad, the auspicious or the inauspicious, ultimately it's all coming from you. Right? Everybody understands. Ishvaraha Savabhutanam. Krishna is the super soul within the heart of everybody. Krishna is guiding the wanderings of all the living entities, and he's looking after his devotees. So whether there's good or bad coming to us, it's seen by the devotee as being orchestrated or as being arranged for him personally by Krishna. You know, Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that we should render our service as if Krishna has personally asked us to do it. You know, sometimes we think, oh, it's just a temple president, or it's, you know, it's the temple commander, or, you know, my wife, the kids, right? Even for the householders. I think it's somebody else that's asking us to do these things. But ultimately, for a devotee, the services that we're performing, they're actually, we're being requested to do those service as if it's personal service to Krishna. So all of the things that a devotee, all of the activities that a devotee performs, he does it in a mood of love and affection for Krishna if he's a very advanced devotee, or he does it in the mood of offering the results. Yat karosi, yad asnasi, yad jahosi, dadasi, yat. Right? Whatever we do, whatever we offer, whatever we give away, whatever food we prepare, we do it as an offering to Krishna. That's like a sadhana, a sadhika. Very elevated devotee does it out of love for Krishna. But in any case, the devotee feels, I don't mind if there is some difficulty, because it's an opportunity for me to purify myself and to again to be engaged in Krishna's service. So they're not they don't consider themselves, or they don't consider their own personal situation. This is a pure devotee, doesn't consider their own personal situation, knowing that ultimately Krishna is orchestrating and organizing everything for them. And so they're not concerned about, let me be relieved of this difficulty, or let me be relieved of this distress. In fact, as it is mentioned here, they're thinking, you know, I'm getting some difficulty, there's some distress, but actually that's just a token of what I should be getting. You know, Lord Brahma prays that in his prayers in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, that, you know, let me offer my respects to the Lord despite the difficulties. Let me offer my obeisances with my mind, with my words, with my body, bow down and accept that which is coming to me, knowing that Krishna shelters, looks after his devotees. So if there's some difficulty, then that must be arranged by Krishna for our benefit. Hard to see that. But for one who is fixed in devotional service, that's how they see it. Instead of blaming this one or that one or the other one, they recognize Krishna is behind it. We have to see Krishna behind everything. Now, we can't complain about the fact that others are giving us a hard time. Because ultimately, you know, it's being sanctioned by Krishna. So therefore the devotee accepts it. And happy to accept it. Well, he may not be happy. It depends on how elevated he is. But for a very advanced, you know, for the pure devotee who's fixed in devotional service, then that's how he sees things. And we see that, you know, you see that in the character of a very, you know, the Pandavas, for example. You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna demonstrates some reluctance to fight, and he appears as if confused. He appears as if he's confused. But when you look at it, when you analyze the Bhagavad Gita and analyze the discussion between Krishna and Arjuna, you see that actually Arjuna is in ecstasy hearing from Krishna. He's actually in ecstasy. You know, momentarily there was some confusion at the beginning when Krishna takes him out in front of the rest of the armies in front of the enemy and so forth. He wants to survey the scene. Then he becomes bewildered. Of course, that's the leela, that's the pastime arranged by Krishna so that he can speak the Bhagavad Gita. But once we get past the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is accepted by Arjuna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then and he accepts everything that he's been instructed, then Arjuna basically demonstrates his ecstasy. Especially we're studying the 10th, we've just finished the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And in 10.18, got it here, 10.18, Arjuna says, Vistaren atmano yogam vibhutim cha janadana Bhuya kataya triptirhi srinvato nasti me mritam. O Janardana, again, please describe in detail the mystic power of your opulences. I am never satiated in hearing about you. Kataya triptihi srinbito nasti memritam. I am never satisfied by I'm never satiated, to put it that way. I can't say he's not satisfied. He's completely satisfied, but he still wants to hear more and more and more. Right? And this is the symptom. This is the symptom that's mentioned here. The reason that a devotee remains fixed in devotional service and is able to tolerate all of the difficulties, one of the reasons, is because he has developed a great affection for Krishna. A great attraction for Krishna. Love for Krishna. So that, you know, when you love somebody, then you're prepared to do anything for them. Right? Usually you're prepared to, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. When you really love somebody, just like, you know, parents love their children. You know, the children get sick and, you know, do naughty things and create all sorts of challenges for the parents, yet the parents still render service to the children because of their love and affection. Even when the children are grown up, you know, like I noticed with my mother, she likes to do service for her sons, even though we're all, you know, close to 50 or above, over 50. But still she wants to serve them. So, you know, there's a very strong bond of affection between the devotee and Krishna, so that any inconvenience that arises as a result of the service to Krishna is ignored, because the affection is so strong. And the devotee accepts the difficulty, as is mentioned here. A humble Vaishnava absorbed in the pleasure of Sankirtan, glorification of the Lord, pays little heed to praise of himself, which he assumes mistaken, right? And happily accepts all criticism which he deems appropriate. So whatever difficulty is there, he accepts it. It's appropriate. What I'm getting is actually a token of what I should be getting. And one of the reasons why this is described in this verse is because the devotees engage in this process of, and what is it in the Sanskrit here? Gira anuyugam anuaham saguna gita paramparaya shravana britta yataha tvam apavaga gati manujai. This is the process of the humans, actually the descendants of Manu. This is the practice. This actually is the practice of the devotees. And what is that practice? Gita paramparaya shravana brito. Right? By hearing from the disciplic succession, hearing about Krishna, anuyugam, which is like in every age, anuaham, in every day, right? By regularly hearing about Krishna, then one develops this love and affection. And we see this in the case of Arjuna. He's saying to Krishna, please describe to me your mystic opulence. I never tire of hearing your glories. I'm never fully satiated. Of course, a devotee is satisfied by hearing about Krishna, but they can hear more and more and more. Prabhupada mentions in the purport that as far as amrita or nectar goes, any narration or statement about Krishna is nectar for the devotees. Anything. We become very happy to hear these discussions. Whereas, you know, And you know, we hear the Bhagavad Gita continuously. We can study the Bhagavad Gita. I noticed this from teaching the Bhagavad Gita. There's so much that you can be teaching. It's bewildering, actually. When you read 10 verses of the Bhagavad Gita and you read all of the purports that Prabhupada's written, and then you think, I've only got an hour and a half to talk about all of this stuff. And so, you know, one set of 10 verses could expand into at least an hour's class of each. And so we have to compress it into an hour and a half so that, you know, we actually get to study the Bhagavad Gita in a year. Otherwise, we just go on and on and on and on and on, and we never ever finish the book. But effectively speaking, you know, you could spend on each verse at least an hour and a half, if not more in some cases. You know, Murujambu tells the story of how, you know, Prabhupada was talking about what book he might translate next after he did the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the devotees were suggesting books, and Prabhupada says, oh, I think we could probably do the Bhagavad Gita. And the devotees said, but you've already done the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada said, no, we could do the Bhagavad Gita again. So, you know, the devotees never tire, actually, from discussing the topics of Krishna, even though they've already read it before. We've already read the Bhagavad Gita, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times. And yet we can go back again and find something pertinent and relevant to our situation now that will inspire us. Whereas, you know, you can't go back and read yesterday's newspaper again and again and again. Right? You just get sick of it. Even you get sick of reading today's news, even though it's supposedly new. Basically, it's the same old thing, just recycled. And very unpleasant and unsatisfying. So, the example is given here, actually. The example is given here in the purport of Svayambhuva Manu. Svayambhuva Manu is the, you know, the mammantar who lives for an incredible period of time, actually. What is it mentioned? Here it is. Svayambhuva Manu lived for 71 yugas. A Manu lives for 71 yugas. One yuga is completed in 4,320,000 years. Right? So he lived for 71 yugas. So multiply 4,320,000 by 71, and what do you get? Got any mathematics? Can you do this sum for us? Hey? This is a Kumon exercise, okay? Multiply 4,320,000 by 71. Easy, yeah? Why not? Should be easy.
4 million.
If you multiply. Anyway, I'm not good at math, and I haven't got my calculator with me.
About 8 billion years.
8 billion?
Yeah, about
yeah, just a short period of time. So anyway, Prabhupada makes a comment in the purport to this verse in the Bhagavatam that, you know, when you prepare a meal, food is fresh after it's been cooked. Right? Food is fresh after it's been cooked. And if you let it sit for some time, then what happens? It goes stale. Right? So he likens that to a person's life. Right? In the beginning, when we're young, life is fresh. And it's enjoyable. Right? Life is enjoyable when we're young. But when we get old, then life becomes stale. We get old, huh? And then what ordinarily would have been enjoyable becomes very distasteful and unsatisfying. Huh? And this is material enjoyment. It's like this, you know, when we're young, we think, yes, this is fun. I'm really having a good time. But as we get older, the same things become very dissatisfying and lose their taste. Because we realize that actually these things don't satisfy. The promise of material enjoyment is such that I become attracted to it, I pursue it, I get it, and then am I satisfied? No. The desire for material enjoyment just increases. This is mentioned in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It's mode of passion. Whereas for a devotee, and Swayambhuva Manu is mentioned here because Swayambhuva Manu was a great devotee. And it's described that for him, his life didn't become stale. And why didn't it become stale? It didn't become stale because, basically, he engaged in this process, this practice. And this is the devotional, this is the devotee's practice. The devotees come together every day, anuyugam, anuaham, anvaham, here. Every age, in every day in every age, they come together to hear and chant about Krishna. And it was as a result of that hearing and chanting, material life, which would ordinarily become stale and dissatisfying, instead becomes very pleasurable and exhilarating because the devotees fill their ears with the topics of Krishna. Kurvato bruvata kata. Srimvato dhyayato Vishnu. Kurvato bruvata kata. So at the end of his life, well, at the beginning of his life, in the middle of his life, at the end of his life, Swayambhuva Manu, through the whole duration of his life, didn't spend it in vain chasing the will of the wisp of material enjoyment, but rather he spent his time discussing Srimvato Jayato Vishnu. He spent his time hearing and contemplating the topics of Vishnu. Shrimbatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Vidyantastoya Bhadrani Vidunoti Suritsatam. Very, very pleasing to the hearts of the devotees. Suritsatam is pleasing to the hearts of the devotees. So it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, the sun rises in the morning and sets in the evening, and for everyone ordinarily that means the decrease of duration of life, right? Just like we were discussing yesterday in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada was saying that we ask people how long you've lived for, right? But actually, Prabhupada says, as soon as you're born, you start dying. So it's not how long have you been living for, it's how long have you been dying for? How long have you been dying? Oh, 23 years. 53 years. Whatever. So even though the rising and setting of the sun denotes the death or the demise of everyone, for it's described how for the devotees who engage in hearing and chanting about Krishna and establishing their relationship with Krishna, their love for Krishna, not just relationship. I'm your servant, which is okay, obviously. But, as we make advancement in devotional service and we're progressing towards loving Krishna, then rather than decreasing the duration of life, actually that hearing and chanting guarantees eternal existence. And so therefore, and as a result of that loving relationship, whether there's a tough time or a good time or whatever, the devotee accepts that situation as being arranged personally for them by Krishna. They see Krishna's hand behind the workings of the material energy. They see Krishna hand in the dealings, in the relationships that they have between the husband and wife, the husband and the children, the wife and the children, the wife and the family, the devotees, the friends, even the enemies. He sees, Krishna. Actually, he's equipoised to all of them. That's what happens. Because he sees, ultimately, Krishna is directing. And out of his affection, he's protecting also. So one has to come to this point of pure devotional service in order to get this protection from Krishna. If one's looking for some material facility, or so is their activities are motivated by personal motivation, you know, what's in it for me? WIIFM. This is the radio station that everybody's tuned into. What's in it for me? But rather, cultivates their relationship with Krishna. Then they'll realize what's in it for them. Actually, Krishna is protecting. But when we're looking outside of the protection of Krishna and we're looking towards material benefits for ourselves, we're always going to be frustrated. We're always going to be dissatisfied. That's why Prabhupada mentions, actually, you know, that the Mayavadis, they intone the mantras, you know, Aham Brahmasmi. I am Brahman, I am Brahman, you know, meditate in this way. But actually, that's not satisfying. And so even the Mayavadis turn to the Srimad Bhagavatam because they want some taste. You know, there's no taste in just being spiritual or one. Even though that may satisfy us temporarily by being a relief of material distress, basically. Liberation means relief from material existence. And that's somewhat satisfying to a degree. Still, the desire for relationship, the desire for action, right? And that action comes in interacting with others, means that the Mayavadis are again attracted to hearing topics of the relationships between Krishna and his devotees. And so they take to their recitation of the Srimad Bhagavatam, even. And of course the Srimad Bhagavatam teaches us that we have a relationship with Krishna and we should develop that relationship in love of Krishna. So this is our system. It's a very simple system, actually. And it's interesting, at the end of the purport here, it mentions that for the devotees who engage in this process of devotional service, it's mentioned here, actually, for the, I don't know, it's interesting. For those who reside in Mathura, but fail to properly cultivate the religious principles that one should observe in the Holy Land, they still become devoted to me just by virtue of living there. Interesting. I'm not quite sure why that's mentioned here. I have to meditate on it a little bit more, but it's very interesting. Even if a devotee is not fully following the practice or the process of devotional service, we can assume that from this. But still, if they're engaged in devotional service, they'll be alleviated from the sinful reactions of those of that behaviour. And then the final quote from Srila Sridhar Swami. Please let me understand you so that I will no longer experience the entanglement of material pleasure and pain. Because here's what happens. We see in the example of personalities like Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami, they become so absorbed in their devotional service that difficulties or, you know, the fact that everything is going smoothly is not perceived by them because they're so happily engaged in their devotional service. And so he says here, or else, just as good, please give me a taste for hearing and chanting about you. Because that's what comes about as a result. If we're enthusiastically engaged in hearing and chanting about Krishna, then difficulties just sort of evaporate. Problems disappear. Doesn't mean that the problems aren't there, but we just maintain our enthusiasm to keep engaged in devotional service, despite the fact that there are difficulties. And we're in a material world. You know, there is never a time when there will not be difficulties. Huh? Practically there's a difficulty every day, you know, beginning with getting out of bed. Right? That's a difficult, that's, you know, sometimes it's sort of like, whoa, what's going on here? Why can't I just sleep some more?
Why do I have to sleep?
Why do you have to sleep? That's elevated. There's a nice story in the, I can't remember exactly where I think it might be in the Lila Amrita, or in those little nectar books, where Prabhupada was talking with the devotees late at night, and he was talking how, you know, you can't stop talking about Krishna, it's so satisfying, but he said the problem is that the body falls asleep. And Prabhupada was talking and preaching, but he was sliding down and down and down. Eventually, you know, he was practically asleep, so tired. After a long day of preaching, I think it was. Also, and he hadn't had a lot to eat. I think it was when he was in Caracas in South America. There's these descriptions of these pastimes. And Prabhupada was saying how we like to go on talking about Krishna, but, you know, the body falls asleep. And so when one's absorbed, and Prabhupada demonstrated that, that was those particular pastimes, you know, I think he had, you know, some milk and puris, and so he didn't eat a lot, and yet he still was very happy just to preach. And there's another verse actually that I remembered here. The sages at Namasharanya, Vayam tu na vitrip yama uttama shloka vikrame yat shrinvatam rasagyanam svadu svadu pade pade. We never tire of hearing the transcendental pastimes of the personality of Godhead, who is glorified by hymns and prayers. Those who have developed a taste for transcendental relationships with him relish hearing of his pastimes at every moment. Nice. And so one who's absorbed in that way, they don't see the good and bad. They just are able to keep engaged in devotional service. They don't mind what people say about them. Huh? They don't care what others say. They're just happy to be engaged in devotional service. So for them there are no difficulties. Just opportunities to render service to Krishna. Well, I think we might finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points? Yes, Adam.
You were just wondering why that you mentioned living in the district of Mathura.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You mentioned that Swayambhuva Manu became successful by constantly hearing and chanting. And then he says that a neophyte devotee, even if he doesn't properly, you know, follow the proper standards due to past bad habits, he'll attain that same perfection if he constantly resides in Mathura.
Yeah. Well, which means basically if he constantly engages in devotional service. Yeah, and because it's mentioned here, the merciful Lord will not reject him. Now, devotees might take advantage of that and say, oh, look, I don't have to be very, you know, focused, fixed. But in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna does say, Bhajate mam ananya bhak. One has to keep up one's devotional service without deviation. Maybe some disturbance, some distraction, but one has to keep focused on devotional service. Not that one can just give up devotional service, then expect to get the results.
In the Surrender Unto Me, Bhujan Prabhu cites Baladev Vijabhushan in 10.11, I destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. And he says the devotee actually doesn't have to endeavor at all. like you have to, the qualification is that you have to be a devotee. But then Krishna says, I personally situate you in the heart, destroy this darkness, and you don't have to worry about it. I take it, he says, I take it as my personal burden, like looking, you know, fulfilling your material and spiritual needs.
You feel that?
I wish. I still get anxious, but...
Still get anxious, huh?
Yeah, less and less.
Yeah, that's good. Any other comments? Questions?
This verse is very relevant for people working and, you know, at the same time trying to improve on devotional service and
yes.
spiritual advancement. Because it's very easy to get disturbed, especially when people at work say good or bad. And it occurred to me that in a sense, only if you know what is devotional service and the beauty there and the, you know, that sort of satisfaction, and you juxtapose that with, say, the bad things that happen on the other side of the world, only then you'll be able to appreciate the beauty of devotional service. So in a sense, it's good that Krishna actually gives a lot of troubles, and people sometimes you think, why are people saying so many bad things? I didn't do anything, I'm so good, and blah, blah. But actually you realize that that makes you understand how terrible material existence is, and it actually people get fed up with it. Because until you reach that, you don't really appreciate this side. So in a sense, that's how I'm interpreting this verse.
Okay, that's good. Material existence is bad, huh?
In the sense, it makes you, in a way, a lot of troubles come in.
A lot of troubles come, yeah.
And then you get fed up with this thing, it's never ending.
Sometimes the devotees get confused, they take the devotional service and they also have troubles. Right? How do we deal with that? How do we deal with the problems that arise as a result of devotional service? Devotional service then just looks like material life. Sometimes even worse. Huh? Yeah. Dan?
I think it's to realise what we're doing for our own growth.
For our own growth.
Yeah, it's to offer anything Krishna in his sense is developed and down the line.
Yeah. So we're looking to the future.
No, not just it. Well, we have to clean it ourselves first in order to become pure. And that's one way of doing it, is to offer everything we're doing.
Yes, that's right.
Even the hardship, everything, there's a purpose while we've been doing this hardship, it's in order to learn what the devotees are.
For our purification, basically. Yeah.
Offering everything to Krishna is only part of it.
Yeah.
The other half is still there, Krishna's also providing everything to make that whole.
Actually, it's not ours. We were discussing this yesterday in the Bhagavad Gita class. Was it yesterday? Yeah. We think that we're giving everything to Krishna. But actually, it's Krishna who's giving it to us. We're offering it to Krishna, thinking that it's ours, but actually it's his.
Yeah. He owns everything.
Yeah. That's why the opulence of the Absolute, which is what we've been discussing, is so it's important to understand all of these things so we appreciate Krishna's position. And that actually everything is coming from him. Oh, listen to that rain. That's good, isn't it? Huh? Wet and cold. Jai Prabhu. Normally we would think this is terrible. Now we're thinking, oh great, let it rain. Alright, I think we should finish here. Gandharva Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.